Welcome to Money Talk with MFLN Personal Finance. This podcast series offers brief recaps of our recent online professional development webinars targeted at personal finance managers and extension educators who work with military service members. I'm Molly Herndon, Program Coordinator for the Personal Finance Team, and I'm joined by Money Talk herself, Dr. Barbara O'Neill. Dr. O'Neill is a distinguished professor in the School of Environmental and Biological Sciences at Rutgers University and is the Rutgers Cooperative Extension Specialist in Financial Resource Management. Good morning, Dr. O'Neill. How are you?
I'm fine, Molly.
Great.
Doing well.
We're going to talk about the Raising Financially Responsible Children webinar, which was the third in a Family Finances series webinar series we hosted this year, and it was hosted in November. And so the presenter, Neil Godfrey, talked about creating habits in children that become financially responsible at a very young age. How does an allowance system foster that?
Well, I think the important thing to remember is that an allowance teaches children limits, that money is not unlimited, and that there's a need to stretch this limited resource, whatever the allowance amount happens to be, over a specific period of time, just like adults will have to do for the rest of their lifetime. So I think that's one important thing. An allowance also teaches long-term savings, particularly if parents encourage that a portion of it be set aside for something that's longer term. Now, that doesn't mean like 50 years ahead in the future for retirement or anything like that, but maybe something that's going to take several months to save up for example. It also can teach charity, particularly if parents encourage their children to include a charity portion out of their allowance. So that's an important thing. Also, young children will understand the satisfaction that can come from achieving a financial goal. If they set aside a certain amount of money and then they're able to buy whatever it is that they're saving up for, that can be very powerful and something that they'll want to do the rest of their lives. And also, I think from the parent's standpoint, an allowance can reduce the nickel and diming that often occurs when you don't have an allowance and then there's these constant pressures for getting money from parents. I remember Neil mentioned that there was the whining factor, and after about 9 different nags by children for their parents, the parents kind of cave in. So I think you can avoid some of that with having some structure around an allowance.
Right. Okay. So if children only see their parents spending money, how can parents show their young child that they're also saving and donating money as well?
Well, I think one thing that you can do is you can have a family piggy bank. You know, it could be a big jar, for example, that everybody puts their loose spare change in. And then that money is used for something fun for the whole family. Maybe it can be some pizza or going to the movies or something like that. So you've got it very visible. I know that's something my husband and I do. We have a change drawer right on the table. We see it every day when we're eating, and we just know that that's the place to dump our change. And so you're kind of modeling savings, and they can actually see the money in the jar grow. Also, just having conversations about savings and the results of savings. For example, children should understand that that vacation that they took, maybe they went to Disney or something, that vacation came as a result of saving money throughout the year, so they had the money to spend on that vacation. So having that kind of conversation. And then also you mentioned charity, and that again can be a conversation as far as different charitable organizations in the community that the family wants to support, and maybe even visiting the location of those charities so that you can see the actual work that that charity is doing with the money that is coming in from donations. That can be very powerful for children.
Right. That's a great idea. So Neil talked a lot about negative communication and lack of communication about money and how that impacts children's understanding of financial management. So how can parents with a history of negative financial behavior correct some of the mistakes they've made and make sure their children don't make the same mistakes?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, one thing that Neil repeated several times during the webinar, she said, don't make money the biggest secret in the family. So in many families, money isn't talked about. So if you don't have conversations, the only way that children are really going to learn about money is through observations, you know, what they see. And the problem is that if there's some negative role modeling going on, that can be difficult. I mean, you're transmitting those negative behaviors on to the next generation. So what can parents do? I think the first thing that you need to do is just recognize that you have a problem behavior, whether it's lack of savings, overspending, a debt balance that's being carried forward, whatever the problem is, just recognize the problem behavior. You might need to seek some support. There's a growing number of financial coaches around the country that are working with people to resolve some of their money issues, or nonprofit credit counselors if it's a debt-related problem. So recognizing the problem, developing some remedying actions. So that might be reducing expenses, increasing savings, getting some financial coaching, whatever the issue happens to be. And then finally, discuss with your child how you're turning things around. You know, tell them your story. Tell them your bad story, but tell them the good story. Because students because I work at Rutgers, but children will learn from the stories almost as much as any other method. So sharing the bad times and the good times, they'll learn from that too.
Yeah. So what about teens? How can teens test the waters of credit before they leave for college? Do you recommend debit cards or credit cards for teenagers?
Well, one thing that you can do with teens if they're going off to school, for example, is you could make them an authorized user on a parent's credit account. By doing that, they will be influenced, their credit history will be influenced, good or bad, by the credit history of the primary account holder. So, but it is an option for some people. Some parents will set their young children off with debit cards, prepaid debit cards. Now, you're talking about debit cards that are linked to checking accounts. They can be good. You know, one of the good points is that you can't spend more than the balance in the account. I mean, you can, I guess, if there's overdrafts, but you are kind of limited, where with a credit card, obviously, you've got an amount that you could charge up. The only thing I would say, though, is if you're going to have a primary use of a debit card, teach your child how to reconcile the balance. You know, if they're not going to be using checks very much, they're going to be swiping a whole lot more. It's very easy to lose track of the balance that's in the account. So you really got to sit them down and say, look, this is how you reconcile. You've got to keep a checkbook register, even if it's not a physical checkbook. If most of the transactions are being done by swiping, they need to keep an ongoing accounting of where the money is going, or else it's going to be very easy to overdraw that account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you think about college students that you teach in your personal finance courses at Rutgers? What's one financial concept you wish more young people were learning at a younger age?
Well, I tell my students that if they don't remember anything else from my personal finance class, that they should remember that compound interest can be their best friend or their worst enemy. So by that, I mean best friend, if they're young, they've got 45, 50 years of saving ahead of them, compound interest can grow their money, even small dollar amounts in their 20s, because many of them are paying off student loans. Get started in your 20s, put something aside, particularly if an employer will match it, and have that compound interest start growing from the day you get your first job. On the flip side, the worst enemy is when you make minimum payments on a credit card, and you're basically paying about 3% of the outstanding balance, and it can take years, even decades, to pay off the balance that is owed. So I think if students really get that, and I model that in my class where with two assignments where they literally have to create a table that shows the cost and the time that it takes to repay a loan with minimum payments, and then they also create another table that shows how money can grow with different types of interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fantastic. Compound interest is not retroactive.
Exactly.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Dr. O'Neill.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you for listening today. You can find this recording and archived episodes of the Money Talk podcast, as well as an upcoming calendar of professional development events, blog posts targeted at military service providers, and more on our website at militaryfamilieslearningnetwork.org.